Every single time a black leader rose to power in America, the same weapon was used to tear them down. For 150 years, the pattern never changed, and what just happened proves it's still happening today. 1870. Hiram Revels becomes America's first black senator. According to historians from W.E.B. Du Bois to David Blight, racist imagery depicting black legislators as apes, monkeys, and savage brutes exploded across American media almost immediately. These weren't accidents. They were weapons designed to destroy black political power. During Reconstruction, over 1,500 African Americans held elected office. Men like Robert Smalls, who escaped slavery, commanded Union ships, and became a five-term congressman. Benjamin Turner, sold at age 5, who became a self-made businessman and U.S. representative. The Jim Crow Museum at Ferris State University documents how white supremacists responded. Political cartoons flooded newspapers showing black legislators as apes. Textbooks taught children that black people were childishly ignorant and unfit for office. As documented in Time magazine's analysis of Reconstruction, what historian Rayford Logan called the nadir of American race relations saw an explosion of white supremacist imagery across every medium designed to warp minds toward racist beliefs. The strategy worked brutally well. By 1877, federal troops withdrew from the South. White Democrats used this imagery alongside terrorism and mass violence to justify stripping voting rights from black citizens. In Louisiana alone, according to National Museum of African American History records, 130,000 black men were registered to vote in 1896. By 1904, that number dropped to 1,342, not through persuasion, through propaganda and violence. Fast forward to 2008, Barack Obama becomes America's first black president. The pattern resurfaces. According to Axios reporting, monkey and ape imagery that had been politically disqualifying for decades suddenly spread across fringe spaces. When it crossed into mainstream politics, careers ended. Roseanne Barr's show canceled within hours in 2018 for comparing a black Obama advisor to Planet of the Apes. Los Angeles City Council President Nuri Martinez resigned in 2022 for calling a black child a little monkey. California GOP official Marilyn Davenport faced formal reprimand in 2011 for circulating an email depicting Obama as a chimpanzee. But here's what changed. As documented by PBS and historical archives, there's a centuries-old racist trope comparing black people to primates. It dates back to the 18th century pseudoscience used to justify enslaving Africans. Thomas Jefferson himself wrote in Notes on the State of Virginia that black people were biologically inferior. This dehumanization wasn't random hatred. It was systematic justification for oppression. For 150 years, every time black Americans gained political power, this same imagery was weaponized to delegitimize them. From Reconstruction legislators to Obama. The goal was always the same. Convince white Americans that black people were subhuman, dangerous, and unfit to lead. February 2026. The current sitting president posts then deletes a video depicting Barack and Michelle Obama as apes. According to NBC News, the post stayed up for 12 hours before bipartisan outrage forced its removal. Even Republican Senator Tim Scott called it the most racist thing I've seen out of this White House. But here's the critical part. Axios noted that imagery which once ended careers now barely produces consequences. The taboo that protected democracy for decades has collapsed. This isn't about one person or one party. This is about recognizing a weapon that's been used against every black leader who dared to rise. From senators in the 1870s to presidents in the 2000s. The tactics evolved. The technology changed, but the strategy remained identical. Dehumanize to delegitimize. History doesn't repeat, but it sure rhymes. And right now, it's screaming at us to pay attention.
I just got here, everyone. Professor Amun-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, Africana Studies Department, former City Councilman for the City of Compton, former Compton College Board of Trustees, and former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees. We want to welcome you here to the Conscious Corner, a roundtable discussion. There's a roundtable discussion about critical issues facing Black people, and where we ask deep thinking about actual facts about Blacks and courageous questioning, and try to come up with solutions to problems that we face as a people. And we surely appreciate everyone that has tuned in. We want to thank everybody that has become a part of the program today. And we're going to get right into it. But at the end of the show, we're going to discuss the legacy and contributions of Reverend Jesse Jackson as he has made his transition this morning, as his family say, peacefully. But he wasn't so peaceful when he was teaching his special truth that created earthquakes and disturbance in the political and community and cultural world of America. But we'll get back right into this. This is the reason we showed this video first is to set the tone and the history of being dehumanized, delegitimize and to dehumanize us as African people by the dominant society throughout history. Then we're going to go around and get a perspective, you know, that the so-called president Trump posted on his, it was posted on his media. He says he didn't do it. A staffer did it. And of depicting Barack Obama, former president of the United States, and his wife as apes. So let's start with Ernest. Ernest, did you get a chance to see this? And you on mute, Ernest. And what is your thoughts about that depiction? You're still on mute. You're on mute, Ernest.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, to me, you know, that kind of brought back a memory of my dad. You know, even when I was a young kid, he said, don't ever think that you're more intelligent, you know, than the next person you meet. I always assume they got as much intelligence as you have. And when I saw that, I thought, now here's white supremacists. You know, they call themselves being the elite. And then how can you be that ignorant to think that you are smarter than average Black people when you see the strides that here we were brought here as slaves in 1619. We were in bondage, you separated. You know, as you said before, they wouldn't let you, if you talk the same language as another slaves, they put you on a different plantation so nobody could communicate. So it was like people had to start a society all over again. And you look back at all the strides and stuff that we've made, you know, if it wasn't so devastating, I'd laugh at that when they try to, you know, you go in a room and right away they assume they know more than you know about a different subject. So to me, it's just, you know, I wonder how somebody could be that ignorant. And then our president, here's a guy that's supposed to be a leader of the free world, and he's probably the dumbest guy that I've ever seen. you know, and he proves that by his statements, because every time he opens his mouth, he tells a lie. You believe nothing that the guy says. So I don't get it. And then the people that follow him, they just as ignorant as he is to follow along with that. So that's kind of just upsetting to even
that's good. Talk about the last time. Brother Ahi? Brother Ahi? You're on mute. Yeah, I'm going to call you right back.
Okay. All right. Here, brother.
Yeah. What do you think about the depiction of Michelle and Barack as apes?
It's just a continuation of Trump's fascination with Obama. You know, Trump has to schedule where he's going to go because he knows he's going to be booed and he knows he's despised by a large segment of the American population and the world. Even some of his people that he's supposed to be representing for the white privilege. He knows that where Obama goes somewhere, they stand in ovations, they applaud, and they're giving Obama something that he wishes he had with the being that popular, but he'll never have because he's wretched. He knows that he has the vocabulary of a fourth grader, and when Obama, his name ever comes up in Obama's, they ever question him about it, he so articulately describes the situation, and not only and talks about his the inadequacies of Trump, but talks about the consequences. And you know, half the stuff he's saying, Trump doesn't understand, but you know, he's making a good point about it. But Trump is his fascination is that Obama will never. He'll everything that he wants to be, Obama is, and he'll never get it. And this is, and even though he's not his ancestors were not enslaved, his experience is very different from the people of Africa, the African people of African descent, born and raised here in America, very different. He still represents a black man here in America, and it's really killing this pumpkin head. It's killing it. So as far as the monkey thing, you know, that's just he's just playing to his people, and he thought they would go for anything. He did say if I shot somebody in the middle of the street that I wouldn't go to jail for, and he's pretty right about that. He wouldn't, you know, he would probably could still run for president. But this is blatant, and it's not a good look. It shows that as being a leader of the so-called free world, that he's childish and he doesn't have the intellect, really, for the job. So that's my view on that idiot.
All right, brother. Historian Joe Hembrick. You there, Joe?
Yes, sir.
What do you think about the depiction of Obama as an ape and his wife?
Well, you know, that's not the first time he's done that. He did that the first go round. I really don't give him the time of day in my thoughts because it's all ignorant stuff that I don't have time for. And I know that Miss Obama always say when they go low, we go high. But they should have mentioned something about Neanderthalism, you know, when he put it out there. Anyway, like the words of Dr. Clark, you know, Africans had great civilizations before Europeans wore a shoe or lived in a house with a window. But the saying brings to mind the book by J.A. Rogers from Superman to Man. And I recommend everybody read that, where they were traveling across country and this senator was presenting himself like a Trump, as a Superman. And by the time they got to L.A., this porter, who I believe was J.A. Rogers himself, had brought this senator down from looking at himself as a Superman down to man. But, you know, we have our own stuff to be dealing with. I don't waste time with what white folks think of us, especially him, with his ignorant self, with his trying to imitate Adolf Hitler in almost every move that he makes. I just don't spend any time even thinking about that. And if we don't know who we are already, I mean, it might hurt some folks that don't know, but I already know. So stuff like that is trash. It doesn't move my thought one way or another. But I remember when Obama was president, they was hanging him. They had monkeys hanging from nooses and whatnot and all that. So he just gives the extreme ignorant, you know, white supremacists credence to do what they do. And that's the only reason he does it in the first place, in my opinion. But like I say, I don't waste any time thinking about him, listening to him at all. So that's my take on it.
Good. Sonia, are you there? If you get unmute. We've been asking you to unmute. Okay.
Yes, I'm here. How you doing?
Yeah, what did you think about the depiction of Michelle and Barack and Nate?
I don't expect anything less from Trump. But what I will say is I feel like that was his way of continuing to test the waters, and also to see his fan base, how many people that supports him to continue to do the things he do, because he knows that he's not going to suffer any consequences. But I hope this wake up a lot of Black Republicans who vote for him to now see, even though all the rest of us has already seen, that he doesn't support us as they think. So I'm hoping that this kind of woke up a few Black people that's Republicans.
All right, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly, and all of you made some very excellent points. I just want to give an analysis from a historical standpoint and a consequential standpoint of why this depiction takes a little deeper thinking within the history context of the European. Well, you see, that's why we showed the video first, to show that Trump wasn't the first. It goes all the way back to the 1800s and probably before then. It was not just in this country. They see African people as subhumans wherever they are. They can be in Haiti, they can be in Brazil, they can be on the continent of Africa, wherever they are. They try to make the world think that we are a subhuman, and it justifies any form of mistreatment and destruction of us and robbing of us of our culture, our land, our history, our names, as Joe was saying, that John Henry Clark, way before they even knew who they were, we had civilization. And the first Thatcher set the basis for what you call architecture today, by the Black woman who put houses together on top of the ground with dung and various forms of twigs and weeds and molded them together to make the house. But let me just go back a little even deeper. You see, it's more than just name calling, and it's more than just Trump. It's deeper than that. White folks didn't fight their way into Africa. It came in as guests, and people received them as you, as just white human beings. They didn't fight their way into North America. The Native American received them. That's why you have Thanksgiving today. They didn't, the white people in this profess to be Jewish, which is a religion, not a race, in Palestine. They lived in cohabitation together for years before the white people decided to be white and kill and take their land. Same way they did the Native Americans. Name calling and dehumanizing people by Europeans has been a pattern to justify the destruction of their lives. They call the Native Americans savages. And said that they came here to, tame the wild, wild west. But it wasn't wild till they came. It's very important that we teach truth and educate our kids to be on guard about some white people really see or try to say this is our image, that we are subhuman. In their biblical texts and teaching, they used to call us Ammonites. That God created man and woman, and those things that creepeth upon the earth. And we were one of those things that creepeth upon the earth. And there's a lot of historians that talk about the Ammonites. Now, I'm going to tell you this. You go to any place where the European has been, you see the same pattern. When the South Africans brothers were fighting against the Boers and the white people in South Africa, they called them guerrillas. Matter of fact, we was going to offer a class in guerrilla warfare when we first started Black Studies at Cal State Long Beach. Because it's not only a physical fight, it's a mental fight. You see many African Americans that don't see themselves as smart or as divinely chosen to this day. Some even white folks taught that if God didn't want white folks to rule us, he wouldn't have had it that way. I mean, I'm just telling you, I mean, it's rough. The psychological effect and depression that people go through when they feel that they are inferior. So they develop sub-behaviors, what they call lumping or hustling. But the point is that we must really see that what Trump did to Obama, he did to Black people, not just the Obamas. When you call the guy that was the president and his wife an ape, you're calling all Black people an ape, and you're calling all Black women an ape. That's very critical for you to take it beyond him just calling. They want to make it look like he's just talking about Obama. But he wasn't just talking about Obama. He was talking about the Black race. Now, Trump jump up and say, I'm the best thing to happen to Black people. You understand? That's what Ernest meant, why he just lied like he breathes. And we have a tendency to think that he's not talking about us. He's just talking about Michelle and Obama. But that tape shows not just political personalities are attacked. See, there was a National Geographical article in the 70s about Snowflake, the white gorilla. Snowflake these people were hunting gorillas, and one was up in the trees eating bananas. No, they were protecting their banana plantation. And they shot a gorilla for eating their bananas. And when they turned the gorilla over, he had a white baby gorilla. And that set the tone for Ambonism. Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Farrakhan taught that we're the Asiatic black man. But they also taught that black is not a color. Black is the essence by which all other colors come from. Now I want you to understand this. This is so beautiful to study and read and listen to scholars and those that have been on the front line. So when the white folks found out that Snowflake had blue eyes and all white gorilla, baby gorilla, they took Snowflake to see if he was smart as the black gorilla to try to determine his intelligence. And they wanted to prove that the white gorilla was smarter than the black baby gorilla. Snowflake flunked every damn thing. In a CBS special by Tom Brokaw, he was trying to understand why we had black athletes, which they call super athletes. So he went to Africa. And he found out that African babies were more mature at babies than white kids. They were looking around and paying attention within 3 or 4 months. And they were just taking in the world and learning. Most people wanted, white folks used to tell us, are we all the same? And for the most part, there are some white people that have committed racism, suicide, and don't go along with them. They even know they benefit from it. They don't go along with the prejudice that comes with racism. But there's a difference between prejudice and racism. Racism is a system of government and cultural apparatus to facilitate white supremacy. Prejudice is just a hatred toward black people. That's a symptom of racism. I did an interview when Latasha was killed by the Asian lady in Los Angeles. And this judge, they found the lady guilty of second degree murder. She shot Latasha for throwing orange juice or something after she accused her of stealing and stuff. Shot her in the back of the head. She was unarmed and she got found guilty. But the judge gave the woman probation. You see, she was a Korean woman. Gave us probation. They asked me, what did I think about it? I said, look, racism wasn't the woman shooting Natasha. Racism was the judge would let her get away with it. It's a system of government, as Francis Chris Wilson always say, was a part process of legalizing prejudice and legitimizing the dehumanization and victimization of black people under the camouflage of law and government and the distribution of life-giving needs and services and the administration of justice based upon the color scheme. In parts of South Africa, each year you can apply to get out of one race classification. You get into another when they had the apartheid system. There are three major forms of racism that is practiced by governments and cultural practices and tradition. Apartheid means to live apart. That's what apartheid means. Based on race. Black people in South Africa, you're blacks, they're colored, they're Indians, they're Asians, and then there's Europeans. And because of miscegenation, they're mixing. Some of them would try to pry to get out of the black race. That's very important for you to see that. In America, it's the same thing. That's the apartheid system. Zionism is the same thing. They rule out anybody except for white Europeans that had nothing to do with Judaism to rule in the government of Israel. The people that started Zionism and the government of Zionism were not Jewish people. They were white people. And they implement that program. Euro and American racism was practiced and still practiced today throughout Europe and wherever white people are. And that's why, and it's a system of government. Martin Luther King didn't fight white people. He fought segregation law. He dreamed that we could all get along. He wanted to practice that. We can all get along as people. But it's very difficult to do that. And because of the concept of our inferiority. Now, most black people just want to live no matter where they live. They get along with anybody. You understand? But not only did the European teach themselves that we were inferior and subhuman, he taught the rest of the world and rewarded them for helping him suppress us. I'm telling you, it's an economic thing involved in there too. Could you imagine paying people to hate other people? That's what the dominant society does. You know, it creates a system by which they put resources. The system of racism is a multi-trillion-dollar business. All the money they're spending on ICE, all the money they spend on the Navy, their Army, creating bombs and things of this nature, is for them to continue to rule. And under this rule, in order to have rich, you have to have poor. In order for people to feel good, you have to have people to feel bad about themselves and about who they are. So it's a psychological and cultural apparatus that we have to begin to teach as much as we can from the standpoint of realizing the reality of the times we're in and the condition we're in. Now, it took us hundreds of years to get out of slavery. It's gonna take us more years to flip the script and for you, black people to be able to be able to live a life of justice and equality and peace without worrying about Europeans coming and taking what they have or killing them straight because they see them as subhuman. That's what they killed Emmett Till about. They didn't see him as a human being. How you kill a kid, put a tie on him, and beat him to death over saying hi to a white woman? I mean, that right there let you know how depraved these Europeans is. But guess what? As Naeem Akbar in his book, as well as Dr. Wade Noble, the psychologist, say that such a thing as democratic insanity. Legitimizing insanity. That's what they do with Trump. He's insane. But they legitimize him by what? Electing him president. He robbing them blind and they still say it's good. You know, he's making America great. He has so many diversion tactics. He do these things that while you looking at what he's doing, his kids and his cronies are just getting more money and more money. And they don't care what happened to the environment. Long as they can live rich themselves. How do you justify talking about you want a war in Venezuela? And they don't even have no Air Force. They don't even have no tanks. They don't have nothing. They were just over there living their lives and not doing what America wanted them to do. Same thing with Cuba. They use every tool they got to suppress people. Economics, politics, military, religion, every aspect of racism that Dr. Francis Presswell talked about, they employ to suppress it. And our teaching about racism has to step up. Step up and start training our children and our future generations for leadership and consciousness about who they're really dealing with. Because as long as their images of white people on TV saving people, crying and acting, because that's where most of us come in contact with white people on TV. We don't really live amongst them or hang out with them. You understand? We work for them. Very few of us have white friends. As we can say, is our true friend. I want you to understand that. Very few of us. There are some Negroes that marry them. Could you imagine marrying the people that killed your ancestors? Marrying them and seeing them as more beautiful than the black woman? And then the black woman trying to look like them? I mean, getting hairdos with hair all down their back. Paying $400 and $500 for hairdos. And fingernails so long they need a stick to wipe their butt. That don't even make sense. I mean, I'm not putting the sisters down who are real sisters who know who they are and not trying to meet the standard of beauty that white folks put on TV. You know? And it's very critical. It's very critical. That we learn these things. See, when Carter G. Woodson said we were miseducated, he wasn't just talking about in public schools or private white schools. He was talking about we miseducate each other because we don't discuss these things or live them with a consciousness. Sometimes you can't tell Tim Scott. You can't tell the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. You can't tell Mickey Minaj what you think. Because they're going to run back and tell the white man. They're like the black people who would tell the white man when we were planning to run away from the plantation. Boss, they're going to make a move tonight. And as Malcolm said, when Master was sick, we sick, boss. And when Master House was on fire, we fought harder than he did to get the fire out. I mean, this is a critical analysis, and it's timely because it shows the need for a re-education of who we're really dealing with in order for us to get. Now, Malcolm said, and as I conclude, that there is such a thing as a nonviolent revolution. He first said the revolution is bloody. You can't have a revolution that's as bloody. But we are in position to have a nonviolent revolution. And that just changed our culture ways. And you know why they trumped up charges against Dr. Karenga and the US organization? See, I was a part of the Black Caucus. I mean, the Congress. I was security for Bob Simmons. And we were young men for total democracy. And when we met to try to develop a national unity, the Black Congress in LA, back in the 60s, the Panthers were there. Black Liberation Army was there. And civil rights organizations were there. Ministers were there. And they all had their own strategies. But none of them wanted to deal with culture. Culture is a revolutionary of values and views. It's not song and dance and soul food. It's about ethics, morals, and a consciousness. Being your African consciousness, even if it's just within yourself that you practice it, or within your house that you practice it, that you learn. See, I came about to start not liking white people with black, but under Kawita philosophy, loving black people is black. Don't even worry about white people. That should be natural, that you be conscious of who your natural enemy is. I gave a lecture once, the natural enemy of black people is Christianity. The minister wanted me to change it. I wouldn't. And I showed him that every European that practiced Christianity is not a Christian, because he don't practice Christianity. You understand? And I'm not talking about the Christianity from the Bible, the Holy Bible, translated by King James. I'm talking about the Christianity that started among African people from a spiritual standpoint. The Ethiopian Coptic Church. Morals and values. Joe Henry called it Maat. All of that way before the European. Horus and Isis. The Immaculate Conception. All these stories out the Holy Bible came from the negative confessions. And it's just a beautiful thing to be liberated mentally, even though I may not be physically, but I'm spiritually, culturally, and mentally liberated. And that's the first step that we want to do for our people. That's why historian Joe is so hard on Christians, because he sees the abuses of Christianity. But there was a time when the Africans practiced the concept of a one God. One God. Some of them call him Goa, God of all. They had different names. Some of them even referred to them as nature. Just nature, life. Creation just came from life. Oh man, it's a beautiful thing to read these books of deep thinkers. And what's so beautiful about Johnny McClark and Dr. Behn and Chancellor Williams, they went back to Africa. They went in the pyramids and on top of the pyramids and took pictures of the Piper's Ani in the Book of the Dead. They didn't just, because they knew that they had to overproof. Black History Month was started by Carter G. Woodson. His whole purpose was to educate us to who we are spiritually, mentally, and emotionally, and culturally. He even went to Africa. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Brother Carter G. Woodson had a lot to say about Africa as the homeland of civilization. Oh, it's a beautiful thing. There were 16 saviors before Jesus Christ. 16. That claimed that they were immaculate conceptions and that God brought them into being. You understand? And then Johnny Jackson's book, The Origin of, The Introduction to African Civilization, he named all 16 and tell you where they are located. But when the European enslave you and acculturate you, you see life the way he sees it. And he taught you to see yourself as monkeys and gorillas. And taught you to see yourself as inferior. Because you don't have the weaponry, military weaponry, but you do have the mental ability. And all that stuff that Tom Brokaw talked about, why black people are super athletes, their bodies are hooked up to a mind. The bodies are hooked up to a mind. Your tongue is hooked up to a mind. Every aspect of your being is hooked up to your brain. That's very important. Well, most people think, well, that's God-given talent. Yeah, it is. It's a blessing for Gail Sayers and Jim Brown to have the athleticism that they have, for Oscar Robertson, LeBron James, for Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, for Arthur Ashe and Martha Watson. All of these people had unique skills and talent. But they were always seen. Listen, right now the white man said he don't want transgenders participating in women's sports. Transvestite. He used to have that for us. Black people couldn't participate in this sport. Most of the baseball records he set amongst himself. They're talking about the Dodgers going to win the World Series again. They're not playing the world. They're only playing themselves. It's called mental masturbation. The same teams they beat in the World Series, they play against them all year round. But they make you think they didn't beat the world by calling it the World Series. Oh man, this is sensationalism at its best. But anyway, so I'm gonna see if anybody have any response to what I just talked about. Brother Ernest.
Only thing I say, I always jokingly tell my kids, you know, at the end of this misogynistic cycle, when we all become one race, we're going to end racism. Because there won't be nobody to hate. They have to figure out something different. So.
Well, let me just tell you that. Joe Hembrick talked about the book From Superman to Man by J.A. Rogers. He also wrote 4 volumes of World's Great Men of Color. In that book, Superman the Man, one of the people asked an African gardener, how many races are there? And the gardener said, only one, the human race. The word hue mean color. That's what hue mean. Humanity, human, mean man and woman. But at the same time, people think it just means something that the white folks define because they have the power to impose. Why do you think his history is required history? All throughout your school. So you can learn how to think like he thinks and be like he thinks. Art appreciation is about his art. Music appreciation. I ain't never listened to no damn European opera and shit. You know? But I'm just telling you, convince you to admire him. He win the hearts and minds of our people. This past Valentine's Day. Even though Valentine was just, they had to behead. It was 2 of them there. Beheaded one of them. Because he was a freak, a rapist, and a pedophile. But they turned it into a holiday. People don't even research St. Valentine. And why does a white man get you to celebrate it? He said, get some candy. Get some drugs, some sugar, and get high on that sugar, some chocolate, Easter, candy, drugs, Thanksgiving. Eat yourself to death. Just eat it all up. Everything you ain't supposed to eat, eat. Not only get a ham, get the whole damn pig and put an apple in his mouth and eat it. I mean, they always tie his cultural holidays to economics, to spend money, to give him money for the things he produced, and drugs and alcohol. It's a rare Christian that don't get drunk on Christmas. Very few that drink, fight, don't even know where the mistletoe came from, or a dead tree in their house, where that celebration came from. They just go out and get it because white folks had it. They don't even know nothing about the lights. Halloween, you tell your children, don't eat that much candy. Then you let them go shopping and knock them and get as much candy as they can get. And then you tell them don't take things from strangers. Then you take them out to strange neighborhood to get the candy. And I mean, it's just wow, man. Everything you tell them don't do, they do. You eat too much candy, cavity. All that stuff. But anyway. Good, Jeff. What about you, Ali? You still there? Ali, you're on mute. All right, Brother Joe, you there?
Okay, thank you. I'm trying to get it. No, okay. I don't have anything to say, Professor. Thank you once again.
You must be kind, bro. Is Ember still here?
Yeah.
Joe, go ahead, Joe.
Just a comment on what you were speaking about us committing cultural genocide amongst ourselves by practicing these European ceremonial stuff. And getting back to the religion, I got a partner that then introduced me to these two words that I hadn't heard until recently. One of them is called proselytize, proselytize, where the European tries to convert you to what you knew into his way of thinking. And then the other word is amalthopatize, where if you don't follow the pattern he wants to change your form of thinking, you get condemned or killed. And let me just say this to the listening audience. More people have been killed over religion than all wars combined. Volney wrote about it in a book called Ruins of Empire. And, you know, getting back to what you were talking about, the crucified saviors, the book is called The World's 16 Crucified Saviors by Kersey Graves. And actually, it was more than 16, but there's 16 listed in this book. And the council at Nicaea, where they decided, you know, what books they were going to use to change all these people's way of thinking. But that's why it's so important that we find out who we are. That's why I always promote know thyself. And you got to study the early history of our people to know what that is. So that's all I have to say.
That's written on one of the pyramids.
Well, it's on the oldest university in the world called University of Wayset that later became the Grand Lodge of Luxor. It's written over the entrance, man, know thyself. Where the mystery system started, they took you in at age 7 and you didn't come out until you were 47. You had to spend years there getting your education, getting mastery of all the different subjects that exist.
All right. That's good. Brother, let's see. Roger Key, you have a comment?
No comment, Ra. No, not really. I just, you know, just thinking about how these people do things and how they've been doing things. Anybody that's thinking straight would know not to do what they do.
Mm.
You know, but when you're brainwashed and things of that nature, you don't let your oppressor be your teacher. So that's what, you know, when you're taking on the ways of somebody that's oppressing you, that's illogical. So that's what a lot of people, they're in that mode. And that's why things continue to be the way they are. And, you know, like you was talking about cultural genocide, definitely have to get away from taking on their culture and build your own. It definitely don't take on theirs, because that's not the way to live. It's the way to die.
Mm.
And you're going to do that anyway. So
that's heavy. Well, you know, once you know who you are, it don't matter where you are. And once you learn the ethics and values of life, you it's like what the Ernest say, how he teaches his grandkids and things how to think. And that's what Malcolm always did. He said, learn to think for yourself. But you have to do some studying and research and get some intelligence to go with that thinking. You know, and it's not easy. I mean, That's why Brother Hendrick said, hey, look, I had to go and study on my own to get the wisdom that he had. Half the things he talked about, he did not learn in public school. But they're not public. They're white indoctrination centers. And we be sent, and that's why it's mandatory that you go. That's right. You have to go to school from at least 6th to 12th grade. 6 years old, you know, Head Start, kindergarten. That's mandatory. And there are some people that started to opt out and teach at home and send their kids to private school. But they also let you know that the state of every state controls the education curriculum. So who, what they, and I'm for independent study. And I'm for educating your own at home. But you also got to learn them what they call intellectual skills. Reading, writing, math. Because they have to function in a dominant European society. They have to be up on the technology, computer science, and all those type of skills, intellectual skills. The ability to write and read. Oh, man. It's a phenomenal. Okay. So, Roger Gigi.
Yeah. Roger,
you want to bring us on in?
Okay. Tell everybody what's for tomorrow. You go to the website. Tomorrow we have she's an author, Dr. Leslie Carnegie. And the topic is A Black Woman's Perspective Leading in Predominantly White Institution, PWIs. She's an author and has a high position at Duke University, and she's a professor at two different universities. That's who we have tomorrow.
That's beautiful. I'll let you know, I'm trying to get Brother Akili of Black Lives Matter to commit to the next Tuesday. I want to wish all y'all blessings without number and all good things without end. And we as a people.
Appreciate it, Professor Ross.
Yeah, continue to struggle. Keep the faith. Hold the line. And make sure that you build a, your world is the life you live in. That's your world. You don't let the world change you. You change the world. Yeah, Joe. Go ahead.
Got to ended up with some comments on Brother Jackson.
Oh, that's right. Man, I'm glad you said that. Anybody have any comments on Reverend Jackson? Ernest?
Yeah, I remember he came out to the Long Beach Naval Shipyard in 93. You know, when he came to California, he came out and gave us a talk because they was trying to save the shipyard, but we had already been closed, so I had a chance to talk with him then, you know. And so there's a good man, another good man gone, so.
Yeah, but let me just tell you something, Ernie.
Yeah.
So he came out to Long Beach after Coleman's restaurant closed. And Rambo, sister, married Chuck Jackson, Reverend Jackson's brother.
Uh-huh.
And he came to the restaurant. And then they took over Coleman's for a little while.
Right.
And Reverend Jackson came and ate lunch there. But I've been knowing him a good while. I'll get to that later. Brother Ahi, what do you think about Reverend Jesse Jackson? Ahi? You're on mute.
Ahi trying to warm up.
Yeah. Brother Joe, what's your comment on Jackson?
I don't have any comments other than, the rainbow thing.
Rainbow Coalition, Operation Breadbasket, all of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Brother Rashidji. Rashidji, you there?
No comments.
Well, let me just say that. Reverend Jesse Jackson was a phenomenal.
Yeah, I think from time to time we ought to have you talk about this again, because you learn all these things, then you tend to forget them.
Yeah.
And so having a conversation like this, and then I can remember talking with my dad and just kind of going over things that I've heard all my life, but we need to be refreshed on that. So.
In 1970-something, we had Reverend Jackson at Long Beach State. At that time, he got suspended by Martin Luther King in the leadership conference two or three times. Because, he's a hard line of street brother. Jackson is street. I'm just telling you, he ain't no chump.
Yeah.
We had him at Long Beach State. And Jesse Boyd out of L.A. was over his breadbasket program. So me, him, and Jesse took a picture together. We had Big Natural. And I can't find the picture. Either my sister took it or it's in the garage somewhere. But one of the classic pictures. Matter of fact, I showed it to Jesse. He wanted to take it. I said, no, you can't have it. This is way before we had cameras and stuff like we do now. But anyway, I'm going to get that picture and show it to y'all. Second, he was very close to Danny Bakewell. And people forget Jesse had a baby out of wedlock while he was married recently. Remember the sister was a teacher at SC or something, I can't remember. But anyway, Jesse was still a phenomenon when it came to organization and pushing the envelope. He would tell white corporations, if you didn't donate to his organization or to a black organization, then we would boycott your business and label you racism. Got a lot of money that way. Strong arming these corporations. Second, Jesse was one of the most articulate brothers that you could ever. When I was at the 1972 Black Political Convention in Gary, Indiana, when they introduced Jesse to be one of the main speakers, the people booed him because of what Joe said, that integration stuff and all that. And he did some stuff that made people mad. All that I am somebody stuff. And so, but when he finished speaking, they gave him a standing ovation. I'm telling you, this brother was articulate. Yeah. I went to see him at a church when he first got back from Palestine, freeing them prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Turned it out. And so I met him when I go up to Brotherhood Crusade, when he come to town, one of the first places he stopped is to see Danny Bakewell and come up to his Brotherhood Crusade. Jesse came down to march to save Martin Luther King Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just telling you, this brother, mm-hmm. I mean, I got some tapes on him that you'd be surprised at how he speak. Good person, let me finish this right quick. This brother changed the political landscape.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I became a registered voter in 1980-something was to vote for him. Called Vandy Camp because of Ron Settle. and vote for Jesse Jackson.
Yeah. I know my dad say when they asked the president when he got that airman back, and when they wasn't gonna free him, they asked the president, said, "What do you think about that?" He said, "Well, I'll be damned, you know." Jesse went over there and came back with him. Said, "I'll get him back."
He freed. There's about two or three people he freed.
Yeah.
But you have to give him credit. I mean, people didn't like most civil rights organizations. People did not like conscious people. Black nationalists, because they were making big money from corporations. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Vernon Jordan and Jesse and Roy Wilkins and all of them, they were paid salaries. They were getting paid $50,000 and $60,000 and $70,000, all their travel and all that. Oh, man, them civil rights organizations made money. But they did a lot of good, like Al Sharpton.
Yeah.
He's picking up the mantle. But Al Sharpton got sued and was being investigated by the IRS. And all that got dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see him speaking. He speaks more about American politics and eulogizing Black people who've been shot. But he's not out there criticizing America like Malcolm and things of this nature when he come up with the Action Network. But anyway, I'm just telling you, Jesse was a phenomenon. He was a serious person. He was a committed person. And he sacrificed his whole life to what he saw was a struggle. He was with Martin Luther King when he was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
He was around Black people. He helped many Black people raise money. He did a lot of great things.
Yes.
And people sometimes don't give him credit for his contribution to our movement. You know, he inspired a lot of young people to get involved in community activism. It may not have been the community activism we wanted, but it was community activism. Go ahead, Ali. Ali?
Yes, I just wanted to say he was courageous. And in the end, regardless of how you feel about him, you're going to be able to look at his actions and see that he was a trailblazer later. And I remember some of those speeches. When he was speaking for the Democratic nomination, and they panned the audience, you see those white folks' tears just rolling down their faces when he got to talking about where he came from. Jesse was dynamic, and he was a great organizer. And regardless of what you feel about him, just look at what he accomplished. Like Ernest said, there was a time when couldn't nobody else get him, Jesse could.
Yeah.
You know, and so what they paid him for it. You know, Jesse was a great arbitrator, and he was nothing but an advocate for his people. And like any other man, he was fallible.
Yeah.
He liked women.
Yeah.
And that's not unusual. I'd rather have it that way than the other. He didn't get caught up with no drugs or nothing else. He was business. He's about business, like the professor said, and getting that money. But that's capitalism. That's the American way. And that's where you get them at, where it hurts, in their pocketbook.
Well,
Jesse was a dynamic cat, man, for real.
He started getting money from the corporations and reparations. It just went to his organization. All civil rights groups looked at it as America owed them, you know, and was paying for all the harm they had done to us. And I'm always praising and giving due respect for his contribution do lifting our consciousness and awareness. And then he, just a phenomenon, brother. I got about four pictures. I can't find them of me and him together. I gotta go in my archives and get. All right then. We already said what we're going to be doing. Roger Key, you got anything to say about Jesse?
No, I'm just going to go ahead and end. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner.
All right then.